the god you worship will shape the values that you hold. And the values that you hold will in turn shape the lifestyle that you pursue. There's no separating these things. God values lifestyle. They are integrally connected.
You're listening to Open the Bible Weekend with Pastor Colin Smith. And Colin, that's insightful. If somebody stops and thinks about that, that makes a lot of sense. But that means that you ultimately need to know who that God is. And that's the important starting point.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that the Ten Commandments that we're looking at are so wonderful, they're to be loved rather than pushed away, is that they really are a reflection of the character of God. I mean, God says, you shall not commit adultery. Why should a person not commit adultery? Why? And the answer is because God is faithful. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the call to us to be faithful in the bond of marriage is precisely a call to reflect the character of God himself. And it's one of the wonderful things that what God says to us is a reflection of who he is and therefore what he calls us to. So if you take God out, you actually don't have any morality left. A lot of folks have the idea, I can be good without God.
Sure.
Actually, goodness is a reflection of who God is.
All right. So, Colin, how does that work out then for my unsafe front?
For an atheist.
Okay, sure.
So an atheist may indeed be loyal to his wife, her husband, but when they are unconsciously reflecting the goodness of God. Hmm. They're unconsciously reflecting the very, very thing that they deny. Because at the bottom line, where does goodness and loyalty and integrity and trustworthiness come from? You know, it doesn't evolve out of the sludge. It
sure.
comes from a creator God who has made himself known. Some may not recognize the source, and that's tragic. But then to come and to know the source and to come and to say, well, now I want to reflect more of who he is, that's wonderful.
It is, but yet that's something that all of us will struggle with, and that's what today's message is all about. If you can, join us in Exodus chapter 3. As we begin a sermon entitled, Your Struggle with God, here's Pastor Colin.
God spoke all these words. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. I'm going to suggest to you this morning that the greatest struggle of your life and mine is simply this, our struggle to let God be God. It's very significant that before giving the Ten Commandments, God introduces himself. And so it's only appropriate that before we launch into the commandments, we actually meet the commander. I am the Lord your God, he says, who brought you out of the land of Egypt. This reminds us that the Ten Commandments are intensely personal. It's this God, the only God, he's speaking to you. And when he says your God, it's singular, not plural. It's a face-to-face encounter. I am the Lord your God. It's so personal, a different God would have given different commandments. So it does make sense that we meet the commander before we look at what he has to say to us. Now, this is particularly important for our country at this time because you don't need me to tell you that one of the greatest debates that's going on in America today is the debate over values. There are discussions about values going on almost everywhere that you look. There's discussions about values in schools, in churches, in politics, in business. What are your values? The discussion goes on everywhere. Where do you get your values? How would a person know which were the right values and which were the wrong values? Or is it only a matter of personal choice? And if it's only a matter of personal choice, what about the values of Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, or Al-Qaeda? They have values too. Values come from somewhere. And the first thing that we need to grasp about the Ten Commandments is that they are a reflection of the character of God. That's why he introduces himself before he tells us what he wants us to hear. And of course, that is precisely why there is so much controversy in our country today over the display of the Ten Commandments in public. The objection that the secularists have to the Ten Commandments being displayed in public is simply this, that they are specifically tied to the God of the Bible. I have to say that the secularists are absolutely right in saying that. They are tied to the God of the Bible. They come from him and they are directly a reflection of his nature. God says, this is who I am. And because this is who I am, this is the life that I am calling you to lead. So the God you worship will shape the values that you hold. And the values that you hold will in turn shape the lifestyle that you pursue. There's no separating these things. God values lifestyle. They are integrally connected. And of course, the common values that shaped the foundation of this country arose from a consensus about God. And the problem that we're facing now, of course, is that when you lose a consensus about who God is, you therefore lose a consensus about what the values are. And of course, when the God of the Bible doesn't fit with where we want to go, we end up with a society desperately looking to find another God who can give us different values and therefore accommodate a different kind of lifestyle. That's why so many folks don't want the Ten Commandments in public. If you choose a different lifestyle, you need to find a different God. If a country chooses to abort 40 million babies, it's going to have to find another God. This God won't accommodate that. If a country wants to pursue the line of marriage of folks in the same gender, it has to find another God. So the search is on in our country to find new gods who will reflect different values and our own choices. Now, the fascinating thing to me is that when you think about it, you'll soon realize that this reshaping of God, this refiguring of God to suit a different agenda goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. You remember that God had given just one commandment, don't touch the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and Satan came in to the first man and the first woman in the garden and began to suggest that God's commandment was far too restrictive. His aim was simple. He wanted them to make a different choice. And in order to change the way in which the man and the woman would behave, he had to undermine what the man and the woman believed. And so he goes about it. Did God really say, you shall not eat of this tree? I mean, how can anyone in the 21st century really be sure about what God has said? You shall not surely die, he said in the garden. You know, this idea that there are consequences that come from moral disobedience, this is greatly exaggerated. This is a power play to repress and people and to cause them to conform to other people's ideas. And then he says, you shall be like God. You can be the Lord of your own life. You can decide what's right and wrong for yourself. You can have the knowledge of good and evil. You can be in the position of being the one who decides what's right for you. See, this goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden. So they become confused about who God is, then they attempt to put themselves in the place of God, and when they do that, they necessarily turn away from the Creator, and sin with all its disastrous consequences then comes into the world. So although they did not have the first commandment, obviously, in this form, I'm suggesting to you that Adam and Eve's biggest struggle was with what we have right here in the first commandment. It's the struggle with God. And anyone who knows anything about religious history, and the history of the world indeed, anyone who has studied sociology, comparative religion, you will know that the history of the human race is just strewn with different gods. You can study the gods of the Egyptians, of the Babylonians, Bel and Nebo, of the Philistines, Baal and Dagon, a history of gods that have been invented by culture in order to accommodate lifestyle. And as we move into more modern times, you have communism placing the state in the position of God. You have capitalism placing money in the position of God. You have hedonism placing pleasure in the position of God. The world is a marketplace of gods. So the question is, why should we go for this God? Why should we listen to what he says?
You're listening to Open the Bible Weekend with Pastor Colin Smith, and we're going to come back and answer that question in just a moment, so I hope you'll stay with us. Our message, Your Struggle with God, is part of a larger series called The 10 Greatest Struggles of Your Life. And if you ever miss a broadcast in this series, you can come and listen online. Our website is openthebible.org. You can stream the program or download an MP3 for free. You can also listen if you have the Open the Bible app. That's a great way to listen whenever it fits your schedule. It's really listening on demand. You'll find the app for free at your app store, or again, come and listen online at openthebible.org. Back to the message. Here's Pastor Colin.
The world is a marketplace of gods. So the question is, why should we go for this God? Why? Why should we listen to what he says? Now, I want to give you two answers that we find right here in the verses that are before us. Why do we follow this God? Why should we listen to and obey what he says? Number one, because he is God. Because he's God. I am the Lord, your God. Now, remember that God had already introduced himself to Moses at this same mountain earlier. So I expect, because there had already been the encounter with the burning bush, Moses must have had a sense of deja vu of coming back to this mountain where he had had his original encounter with God. And the only difference, of course, is now he has 2 million people standing around him. God said in Exodus 3 in verse 14, I am who I am. I am who I am. Now, the original Hebrew gave that in just one word with four letters, the letters YHWH. It's hard to be certain about how this was pronounced, this name, because the Hebrew text of the Old Testament was preserved without the vowels. And how do you know how to pronounce something if you're not sure about the vowels? If you add vowels to the letters YHWH, you could get something like Yehoah. Or if you anglicize that, you would get Jehovah, which is where we get that particular name in the Authorized Version translation of the Bible, Jehovah. But most scholars think today that, in fact, the name should be pronounced Yahweh. Yahweh, with just the two vowels added to the four letters. This is the name by which God made himself known to his people. It is the name that he announced to Moses from the burning bush, and it is the name specifically that he uses here at the beginning of the Ten Commandments as he introduces himself to his own people. You always know when it's this name that's being used, because in your English Bible, if you look very carefully, you'll see there that the word Lord is printed with four capital letters. Now, it's not always like that in the Old Testament, but whenever you see the word Lord in your English Bible printed with four capital letters, it is translating this particular name, Yahweh, which means I am who I am. It's the name by which God made himself to Moses from the burning bush. So coming back now to Exodus, as God is introducing himself, he's saying, I am the Lord your God. I am Yahweh, your God. Or to translate it right through, I am the I am, your God. You say, okay, I've got that. It sounded a little technical. Why is it important? Here's why. Yahweh is who he is. God is who he is. He's not whoever you or I might want him to be. He's not the product of some ancient culture. He wasn't thought up by Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's not a reflection of the ideas of Moses. He is the creator and the sustainer of all things. He is the unchanging, self-existing God. He is dependent on no one, and he is obligated to no one. See, that's the point about the burning bush. The fire does not depend on the bush for its life. It goes on burning, and the bush is not consumed. It is a self-existing fire. That's how God is making himself known. He's saying, I don't depend on anybody. Bel and Nebo and Baal and Dagon, who worships them today? They depend on the market that gives rise to them. But I don't, says God. I am who I am. From eternity to eternity, I am the living God. Let me introduce myself to you. Some folks love him. Some folks hate him. No folks can avoid him. He is who he is. So to put him in the place of God is to conform to reality. Resisting him would be the world's most futile business because none of us can ever avoid him. There's no one else like him. Every other god is a product of human history and of culture. They were the products of the culture that sustained them. They were like pop stars that depend on the market that gives rise to them and die as the market moves away from them. Who worships Baal or Dagon today? They were designer gods produced by and fitted to a particular culture. Of course, our world thinks that's true of all religion. But this God says, I am. I am. And you shall have no other gods before me. And the reason why you and I should bow before him is, number one, he's God. He's God. Number two, the reason we should bow before him is that he's good. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Now, why does he say that? See, God could have said, I am Yahweh your creator. I own the cosmos. That would have been true. I have more power than a million nuclear bombs, so you'd better knuckle under and worship me. He could have said that. It's true. But it's not what he says. The Creator himself, who has all power and is accountable to and subject to nobody, does not make his appeal to you on the basis of raw power, like some dictator. But he comes to you and appeals as the gracious God who extends mercy towards you. Think about that. It's awesome. I am Yahweh, your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, he says to these folks. Life in Egypt for them, of course, was miserable. The Hebrews had been there for 400 years. They had been oppressed, abused. They were miserable. They had no hope. There was no political process to bring them out of Egypt. There was no educational program that was going to get them a better start in life. And then Yahweh stepped in. And he brought these desperate people out of Egypt. And now he introduces himself. I'm the one who did that. I am Yahweh. I sent the plagues that overpowered the gods of the culture. I'm the God who opened the Red Sea. I'm the one who closed it over your enemies and thereby delivered you from a terrible slaughter. When you cried out, nobody else was listening, but I was. Nobody else saw a future for you, but I did. I came down to help you. And I didn't do it because there was some pressure on me coming from somewhere to do that. I did it because it pleased me. He's good. And you know, you will never be ready to embrace God fully until you've come to the conclusion that he's good. That's why knowing him through Jesus Christ, you see, is the very foundation of the commandments. It's the beginning of this struggle. It's where this whole life begins. One writer, I think very provocatively, describes the Ten Commandments as pillow talk. Think about that. Pillow talk. Because we're light years away from the courtroom in which sterile power is exercised. We're in the intimacy of a love relationship in which Yahweh, who has come down and reached out to make us his own, says, "You're mine, and I want you to know me. And I want you to walk with me throughout the course of your life and to enter into all the goodness that I have planned for you." The talk of the lover who has won the affection of the loved and now embraces her and says, "You are mine." Why should we make Yahweh our God? Because he's God and because he's good.
What an important question for us to be addressing in today's message. Why should I obey God's commands? Why, as Pastor Colin was talking about in today's message, why make Yahweh our God? What a great reminder, because he is God and he is good. Our message today is entitled Your Struggle with God, and it's a message that's addressing the first of the Ten Commandments. In fact, our series, The Ten Greatest Struggles of Your Life, is a look at the Ten Commandments and how they're not just an arbitrary list of rules that God made up, but they actually address the ten greatest struggles of our lives. And if you want a copy of today's message or this series, ask about the 10 greatest struggles of your life when you call us at 1-877-OPEN-365. That's 1-877-673-6365. Or you'll find ordering information online at openthebible.org. Well, for your gift of any amount this month, we want to offer you a copy of Pastor Colin's brand new book. It is called Hike Through the Bible. It's 50 chapters, and it takes you all the way through the Bible story from Genesis to Revelation. And Colin, where did the idea of this book come from?
Well, Steve, that goes back a long way, actually 30 years, to a conference I attended in the UK. And at lunchtime, I just happened to sit next to a man who had given his life to serving as a pioneer missionary to an unreached tribal group in northern Thailand. His story was absolutely fascinating. He told me how he had met the tribal chief, how he'd built his own home, having been invited to live among these people, learn their language. I mean, I'm listening to his story. It was amazing. And then I asked him over lunch, "Tony," I said, "where in the world would you begin in explaining the gospel to people who don't even know who God is?" And he said, "We tell them the Bible story." And that really started me on a journey that's gone over many, many years, because God has introduced his son to us through an unfolding story that begins in Genesis and it ends in Revelation. And actually, if we follow the contours of the Bible story, we have the best possible introduction to understanding who Jesus is, why we need him, what he's able to accomplish, what he's done for us. And so Hike Through the Bible is very simply an introduction to the whole of the Bible story. It shows how it's all pointing towards the Lord Jesus Christ. And I hope that it's going to be helpful and encouraging for many, many people.
Well, we want to send you a copy of Hike Through the Bible as our way of saying thank you for your financial support this month. You can give a gift of any amount online at openthebible.org or call 1-877-OPEN-365. That's 1-877-673-6365 or online at openthebible.org. For Pastor Colin Smith, I'm Steve Hiller. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us next time. Open the Bible Weekend is a listener-supported production of Open the Bible.
At Open the Bible, we're grateful for like-minded organizations committed to sharing the gospel around the world. And to that end, I'd like to commend the work of Global Fingerprints. You know, in the book of James, God calls us to help orphans in their distress. That's a clear command, but it's not always clear how we should obey it. And this is where Global Fingerprints comes in. Through Global Fingerprints, you can sponsor a vulnerable child to help meet their physical needs and ensure they hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. I want to commend Global Fingerprints to you. They're focused on equipping the local church to care for children, and where there is no church, they help to plant one. If you'd like to help a vulnerable child, you can find more information on Global Fingerprints at our website, openthebible.org/GF. That's openthebible.org/GF.